Welcome to this episode of The Balance. Today, I have with me Ben Cogswell and Jen Dean, who have just authored a new book called EduProtocol's Field Guide, the primary edition. And I got a sneak peek because they honored me with a request to write the introduction, and I was thrilled to accept. I dug into the book. I absolutely loved it. I work with early elementary teachers all of the time looking for fun, creative ways to engage students, use technology in really responsible, productive, exciting ways, and this book totally accomplished that. So Ben is a passionate kindergarten teacher in Salinas, California, and Jen is a first grade teacher in Desert Sands Unified School District in Southern California. They collaborated on this book, and I am so excited to have them on the podcast to share a little bit about the book, their experience, and using these protocols with little learners. All right. Well, welcome. I'm so excited to have this conversation. And as usual, I would love to start by having each of you just tell us a little bit about yourselves, your journey in education, kind of what led you to pursue a career in teaching, and what you're teaching right now. So we'll start with Ben.
Hi, my name is Ben Cogswell. I am currently a kindergarten teacher in Salinas, California, the salad bowl capital of the world. I've been teaching for 17 years now. And interestingly enough, I didn't start in kindergarten. I started as a sixth grade teacher. And I did that for about 7 years. And then I jumped to being an instructional coach and an educational technology coach. And through working with teachers, and I think that's when I first met you at one of the conferences at Monta Vista. But anyway, mm-hmm. sidebar there. From working with teachers, I just worked with a lot of kindergarten teachers in this K-6 environment in Salinas, and I just found a lot of kinder teachers who really were, you know, kind of anti-technology, and so I really kind of wanted to jump in there and give it a try, and I just kindergarten is such a great age. You know, because they're learning to read, and that's just like such a special thing. And so for the last now 6 years, I've been teaching kindergarten, and it's been a wonderful journey. I mean, there's a lot more that's kind of happened in between, of course, but that's kind of the long and short of it. And I've been Jen, who will introduce herself, is just such an amazing educator, and I've been lucky enough to collaborate with her, I think, for about the last 3-ish years now. And so it's just been a great experience. That's so awesome. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for being here. All right, Jen, tell us about your journey.
So I actually started my teaching career in Illinois. And when I wanted to be a teacher, I knew right away that I wanted to teach the younger students. And in Illinois, you can actually do an early childhood certificate, where you enroll in a program and you student teach in 2 different grade levels. So usually you do pre-K and then like first or second grade, and you can only teach up to 3rd grade with that credential. And a little fun fact is I actually did all of my college online. And so while I was in school, I was working in schools as a paraprofessional. So I got so much awesome experience and things I was learning in class. I got to really like try out with my teachers and things like that. And then I basically got hired right away. Actually, I was a paraprofessional. I did my student teaching at that school, and then I got hired the next year. So I had a really nice transition into teaching. And then I taught 2nd grade in Illinois as well. And then my spouse and I were like, why are we living in Illinois? It's so cold. And we were always visiting California. And my aunt handed us an article that said there was a teacher shortage. So we literally just like quit our jobs and moved out here. And then I started teaching 2nd grade out here. And now I'm teaching 1st grade at Amelia Earhart Elementary School of International Studies. Nice short title for a school. It's an IB school. So anybody who's familiar with like the PYP IB, I'm at that kind of a school right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually in the Coachella Valley area. It's nice and hot. And if anyone is going to Coachella, you know, that's coming up this weekend, next weekend, Stagecoach, that's my area right there. So so I've taught pretty much all the younger grades.
Nice. So do you have a favorite?
I think 1st grade, okay, I might get some pushback for this. I think 1st grade is the hardest, but I know kinder, I know, but I love it. I absolutely love it. Like, I just think the, like, kind of like what Ben said, like when you see that growth from the beginning to the end, Same with what he sees in kinder. It's just like, wow. And then the students also see their growth, and it's just like so amazing. So it's so rewarding.
Yeah, all the listeners missed the serious side eye that Ben just gave Jen when she said first grade. But I think all of us, and I speak from my own experience as a teacher, I think every teacher just has their sweet spot, right? Like I knew it was just high school, and I met so many people who were like, not middle school. And I said, no, I could never do middle school. They're so squirrely. I had kids in middle school. They didn't smell great. You know what I mean? Like, it's just there's a lot going on in middle school. And then I was coaching in elementary, and it was like a different world. I remember being in my first coaching kind of situation in elementary. It was a first and second grade combo class. I had not been in that class 10 minutes, and all I feel is a little tiny human hugging me from behind and saying, how long are you going to stay? And I turned around and looked at this child and I thought, well, this is a first. Like in high school, you don't touch your students. They're not really excited about you staying generally. It was just like hilarious, the night and day of elementary and primary or elementary and secondary, I mean. So, well, oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say 100%. They love you.
I know that must be so nice. I think secondary finds out they really liked you, but usually they've already left your class and some are kind enough to come back and tell you, but not always. So you guys wrote a book called EduProtocol Field Guide. So most listeners probably have heard of EduProtocols. They are super popular. I had John Crippo on my podcast years ago talking about EduProtocols and kind of the origin story of them. And you guys kind of took on the challenge of doing a primary edition with a focus on TK through second grade. And I'll share with everybody listening before we started recording, I often get young, kind of early elementary teachers asking, like, gosh, I love some of the things you're talking about, but I don't know how to make this happen or how to use technology with such young students. So I'm curious, what inspired you guys to write the guide? Where did the kind of inspiration or idea come from? And I'll start with you, Ben, and Jen, if you want to jump in after, that'd be great.
Well, when I first started back in the classroom and going into kindergarten, kind of giving a little backstory is I loved using technology, but not all my colleagues were there. And so we're at a professional or a PLC or a GLT, a grade level meeting, and we're trying to figure out, well, what are we going to collaborate on? We had a bilingual teacher, you know, we had an English only teacher, you know, we're all at kind of different places. And so we started with one of the protocols, and that one was called Math Reps, created by Lisa Nowakowski. And we just started implementing kind of these protocols. And John had just kind of released his book, and I was like, all right, we got these protocols. I'm kind of familiar with them. I'd like to see kind of, here's the challenge always, like, how do things work in kindergarten? How are we going to making it work in kindergarten? And kind of throughout that year, I tried a few more different protocols. And I think it was maybe year two of using protocols in the classroom. John had reached out and he had kind of said, hey, there's this teacher named Jen, and I'd like you to start maybe do some presentations on protocols for the littles for me. And so Jen and I kind of connected and we started collaborating, and we started out kind of just doing some presentations on these EduProtocols. And it was a few months later, maybe about 6 months, John had said, hey, you know, I have this crazy idea for you guys. What do you think of writing an EduProtocols book for primary students? And I think at that time, Jen and I were like, oh, it's very honored to like have the offer from John. But I don't think we had any idea kind of what we were getting into at that time, because, you know, I don't know, we started the project probably about 2.5 years ago, and it was definitely a journey. But Jen, what would you like to add?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. We were the same thing. I met John because I was on my local Q affiliate. And he at the time was working for Q. And so I had met him a few times. And then through him, I kind of met Kim Vogie. And we had them come to a couple of our local events and do some stuff. And so I started implementing a few of the protocols, and I was just like hooked instantly because I was seeing this growth and I was seeing this engagement, and I was seeing students like cheering when I said we were going to do something, or
Oh.
asking me like, hey, can we do this today? And I'm like, oh, you're asking me to write something? Okay, let's do this. And then met Ben. I think we did some stuff with Q Kid Booms and stuff too. And we just started working together. And I remember, I think that when John offered, I was like, yeah, let's do this. And Ben was like a little more like, oh yeah, I want to do this. But he had a little more of like the, I know this is going to be a lot of work. And I was like, oh no, it'll be fine. Let's just do it.
Right.
So that's kind of how it happened. And it was, I think we didn't realize for sure like how long of a process it was, but it was really amazing.
Yeah, I like to compare writing a book to like I feel like it's the professional equivalent of having a child. Like literally it always takes somewhere in the neighborhood of about 9 months to actually write and go through editing, and then you got to do production. And yeah, it's quite a process. It is nice though if you find an author, like co-author, that you work really well with. It's been such a absolute honor for me to get to write with Dr. Novak. So when you find like your person that you jive with in terms of writing, it definitely makes that process a lot easier to kind of plow through.
And just like a little funny story is, maybe it took Jen and I a little bit longer because we didn't realize when we had started writing the book, we didn't really have a word count. And so we just kept writing and writing and writing. And we turned it into the publisher. And I think we were at like 98,000 words or 97,000 words. And, you know, we were like, I don't know how much that is. And so they kind of said, when we turned our first version in, they're like, well, the first Edu Protocols book was about 40,000 words. The last one we put out was about 23,000 words. And so we're going to have to kind of, we basically wrote a trilogy, as Jen and I like to joke. So who knows, at some point there may be another one coming out.
Ooh, well, that's fun. At least you have something you might turn into like a follow-up, but that is hilarious that you almost have to parse down what are we going to include in this one. Yeah, it's a, by the way, for everybody listening, it's a fabulous book, and definitely one that when you pick up, you're going to be, the protocols are amazing. The way you guys write about them too feels so accessible for the littles, which is something that I think a lot of lower elementary teachers are really going to appreciate about this book. So I wanted to give you guys each a chance, and we'll start with you, Jen, to select one of the kind of five protocols or edu protocols or lesson frames in the book and kind of share a little bit about it, why you like it, why you think it's valuable, and kind of how it works. And if you want to share a student response or how they feel about it, that would be awesome too.
Okay, this is a hard one to pick, and I didn't talk to Ben to see which one he wanted to do, but I know whatever one I pick, he will have another one. It actually leads perfect because, like we said, we had to make a lot of cuts to the book because of our word count. So that really made us think, okay, what are like our five essential edu protocols that we really don't live without, that we do this like all the time? And that's what we ended up including in the book. And the one, if I'm going to pick one right now, there's, I love them all, but I'm going to go with emoji writing for today. The little random emoji writing is basically this idea. It started off with the idea of you're writing to an idea, and it's about creative writing. So basically, Edu Protocols has their own random emoji generator, and you would show one emoji, and that is like the beginning of either your story or it could be anything, any type of writing really. And then it's quick. It's like a quick, you're not necessarily working so much on all like, you know, like capitalization and spelling. I mean, you're just kind of writing quickly, and then you can go back and edit later. But the idea is a quick response. And then the second emoji is revealed, and you have to connect it to what you were writing about before. And we kind of adapted it because obviously like they go up to five emojis. And again, when you're doing this in the younger grades, it's all about making it smaller so you can get to that end picture. And if I start off with five, that'd be really overwhelming for the students, or writing a paragraph on the first day of first grade. So we kind of adapted it. And Ben had this really great idea of like using it for our phonics. And so if we're doing short A for the week, maybe all our emojis are CVC is short A. And I know he can talk a lot more about what he does in his classroom, but he started it a lot with, they would just simply maybe write the word, or just even say the word, or maybe write, maybe they're just writing the short A sound, you know, the A, they know that's the sound. And then I kind of adapted it where I'm like, okay, you know what, I'm going to introduce this, and I'm going to have them write the word, but then I'm going to have them type a sentence and then audio record it, add some animation. And then we do that for a little while. And then once they get the hang of that and all that, then we work on now, okay, let's create these stories. And I think it's really important because if you're so much of the writing programs that are out there right now are so just formula driven. And it's not that students don't need that, right? They need a place to start. They need to know how to write. But if they're only ever taught formulas, they're not really learning how to write. You know, we don't write this book in a formula like that. That's not true writing. And it's exciting because, again, like the first couple times I did this, I had parents contacting me because their kids were going home and asking them to show them emojis so that they could write stories. And they were doing this like at home. And I'm like, okay. And then if I didn't do it for a week or two, the kids were like, can we do emoji writing today? And I'm like, this is pretty awesome. Cause usually first graders like don't want to write, like they're really intimidated by the process already. And so this is like, again, because it's not so heavily focused only on spelling, it's really focusing on that creative writing. And then we go back and edit. It gives them this creative experience where they truly learn how to write and they love to write. So it's like both. They're learning how to write, but they're also getting that enjoyment. So hopefully next year and the years to come, writing is something that they really love to do.
Yeah. And they feel they can do, right? I think that's, I even saw that in high school so often when kids were asked to write, you could just see the immediate anxiety of the mechanics of it all or the sentence structure. And sometimes, especially when they're young, it's like just find words and put them together and have fun. And we can do this editing stuff and the mechanics stuff later. And whenever they're asking for something, that just has to be the most exciting moment where you're like, yes, I have nailed it. I have something that they love. So that's a wonderful example. All right, Ben, your turn. Same question. Which of the five lesson frames from the book do you want to share with listeners? What it is, why you think it's valuable, student response, any of that, we'd love to hear.
Well, definitely. I also, like Jen, love emoji writing, and they love the mystery of emoji writing. But one of the other ones for writing that I also love is one that we call Little Parts. And it's hard because all of them are great, but this is just kind of what happened today and what we were doing today, which is why it comes to mind. Little Parts is also to get kids to write, and it comes from another protocol called 8 Parts, and it basically you take kind of typically a fun image in the beginning, a very silly image, and you get kids to generate parts of speech, because typically, kind of taking a step back, what happens is we teach kids nouns, and we teach them nouns for 3 weeks, right? What's a noun? And then we move on to verbs. What's a verb? And then we kind of just keep going on parts of speech, and by the end of the year, you ask a kid, what's a noun? What do they say? I don't know. Right. And so Little Parts and 8 Parts is this whole idea of you kind of teach all the parts of speech at once. Well, we knew that, you know, kindergartners can't do all the parts of speech at once. Right. And so with Little Parts, we take some parts of speech. Again, it depends on what grade you're in, what time of year it is, because the beginning of kindergarten is much different than the end of kindergarten.
Right.
Because there's just so much growth. And so, like, for example, today we did a Little Parts. And so we're kind of at the point where we're giving students a little more choice. And so we said, all right, we're going to do Little Parts and we're going to work on building a sentence. And remember, our sentence needs to have certain parts of speech to make it interesting, because a complete thought for a kindergartner, it's so abstract, right? Mm-hmm. But if you can kind of understand that Little Parts, okay, really, what's the core of a sentence? It's a noun and a verb. So we're going to start our sentence of a noun. Remember, a noun is a person, place, or thing. Mm-hmm. And so, all right, pick your noun. And so, like, one of my students, his noun was so cute. He wanted to write about Baby Yoda. And so yeah, he chose his noun. His noun was Baby Yoda. And then, all right, what is Baby Yoda going to do? Right. Well, Baby Yoda, I think he wrote fly. Baby Yoda was going to fly. Right.
Uh-huh.
And then we're starting to work in our adjective. So what's a way that we can describe Baby Yoda? How are you going to describe him? And I think this student at first, he wanted to describe Baby Yoda as little, but then he kind of realized that, oh, when I'm talking about Yoda, my adjective is actually baby and my noun is Yoda. And so we worked kind of through these parts of speech. Each student kind of did a different part of speech, working again, a lot of phonic skills in there. What sounds do you hear? How are you going to write the word? And we added an article. And then, of course, what's the part of speech that even kids in high school, it's not really a part of speech, but it's a part of a sentence that they always still forget?
I'm listening to you. And do you know what I'm thinking? I had so many ninth graders who didn't know their parts of speech, and I wish they had done this with you.
Right. And so, yes, it's really good. But the period, right? Because I did sixth grade. I shouldn't say period. Excuse me. It's not period. It's punctuation, right?
Punctuation.
Say period, right? So the punctuation. Yeah. So anyways, we went through this and there's different ways to do it with different parts of speech. But we kind of have today, we use a graphic organizer and the parts of speech are all mixed up and the students write and draw pictures. They cut them out. They reorganize them. Nice. And so it's so the coolest thing I love about doing this practice over and over. And typically for kindergarten, by the end of the year, we'll go, you know, article, adjective, noun, verb, and maybe a prepositional phrase. But it's so cool because you do this, you know, with writing, with maybe images from your curriculum, and you get to the point maybe where they're doing, okay, we're going to do our narrative writing, and I'm walking around and we're looking at kids as they're writing, and I'm being able to give them feedback like, oh, you know, you're missing your verb in this sentence, or you're missing your noun in this sentence. And I can actually give kids feedback like that as they're writing, and they're able to internalize it. Right. And it's so valuable, to get them to be able to really understand the structure of a sentence. And of course, you know, as they move forward to first grade, we might vary up the sentence patterns a little bit more, or we change the parts of speech. But just seeing kids at the beginning of the year, just doing nouns and verbs. And by the end of the year, writing these more complex sentences and understanding these sentences are not just sentences like, you know, like you think of a kindergarten sentence. I see like a lot of like, I see, I can, I have, you know, they're writing sentences with nouns and strong verbs. And it's really amazing. I feel like by the end of the year, you know, you give them a picture and you kind of say, hey, what do you see in this picture? Or what would you like to write about? Or, hey, let's just write about a fun sentence. What happened today? It's really flexible in the way you can do it. And so, again, you know, just today from writing about baby unicorn, we had a baby Yoda. We had a little girl writing about a unicorn. You know, there was Pikachu came up today. And it's very highly engaging today, especially because they had so much freedom in what they could write about. And they had a lot of fun. And so it's just amazing as they move up, taking kind of Jen and I kind of love to smash them together, the little parts sometimes and the emoji writing as they progress, they're writing there when you're combining these two protocols, because writing is such a high leverage strategy for all grade levels. And so definitely those two are really my favorite right now. But I just got a quick shout out again to Math Reps and Lisa, because I had a kid told me to yesterday that was one of his favorites. So kind of.
I love that. Well, and to stay with you, Ben, so you're a kindergarten teacher. I know you have a lot of kinders when they come in. My daughter, when she went into kindergarten, could read, and she was at a bilingual immersion school where 90% of her instruction kinder was actually in Spanish. It was a totally new language for her. And I know you have Spanish speakers coming in with like no English or very little English. So as a kinder teacher, I know you kind of worry a little bit about the imbalances that you see in terms of literacy and the other skills that those young learners are coming in with. Can you talk a little bit about how you see and kind of how you manage that diversity of skills and ability with your young students? How do you try to meet that diversity of need? Because I know it's something that teachers at lots of grade levels struggle with, but particularly at kinder, first and second grade, there's so much variation.
Well, to kind of just preface, and I just actually learned this at a training I went to last week, the district that I'm working in, out of all districts that have over 5,000 students, 5,500, ours in the state of California, our district has the highest ELL population in the whole state of California. And so I just actually, this was in a UCLA study. And so this is always something that's driving me, because like you're saying, I mean, I have students that come in with, you know, very little English, or just students that have that, you know, can't even count or don't know their colors. And so there's just a lot. And then I have students that I haven't been, you know, I haven't had like strong readers at the beginning of the year with who I've had, but just the diversity. And like you're saying, and the imbalance is obviously one of the reasons I went back to kindergarten, because I saw so many struggling sixth graders in my area. But one of the things that I really love about just, you know, edu protocols is I feel like they help address, you know, some of those imbalances. And I think about, for example, you know, like Jen talked about, we're doing emoji writing. And so we're doing emoji writing and we're looking at an emoji, and so often there's just, you know, one right answer, right? What's one word we can write? So we have an emoji. Okay. You put it in your imagine. You're not sure what it is. And so, okay. You see a little bit of red coming up. What do you think it is? Oh, I'm not sure. All right. You see a little claw coming up. What could the emoji be? You're starting to kind of develop up as we're kind of revealing these emojis, and the emoji comes up and it's a crab, right? Cause right now I chose crab because we're working on blends, right?
Okay.
And so some students could choose to write crab. You know, but even if they didn't want to write crab, they could write the word red, a more simple CVC word. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, you can have students, what other words can you write? Oh, you could write pincher. Oh, maybe like a student doesn't know it's a crab and says lobster. Am I going to accept that or am I going to say no, right? Mm-hmm. And so now this simple emoji that just maybe we see in one way now is being seen in a lot of other ways. And so students are getting a chance to kind of have these different conversations. But not only that is we only have a limited amount of time to teach vocabulary. And so now we're looking at this emoji, which is a quick phonics lesson. And we're taking maybe a moment to increase students' vocabulary, right? Oh, did you hear that? This student know, maybe one student knows crustacean. This student said crustacean. How many syllables does that have? There's so much that you can work in there and students are engaged. And on top of that, I think one of the things that Jen and I love about, you know, about creating all young students need language, and Jen and I love using technology specifically for our one of our favorite tools, on a computer. Mm-hmm. And you have to think, I'm gonna give you a second to think, what's the best tool? And Jen, if you want to jump in here and answer, what's the favorite tool? What's our favorite tool?
Seesaw.
Yeah, specifically.
This is the competitive Catlin. I'm like, oh my gosh, he asked a question.
But wait, there's more.
The microphone is the favorite part of Seesaw. There we go.
Nice.
And so we use this tool, like we're having kids, you know, how do we get kids to talk more, right? Again, because the more language they develop, they don't always have these experiences at home. You know, I could go on and on, but, you know, I'll give Jen some room to add as well if she would like to. But, you know, we're talking about it and then we record together as a class and then we listen to it as a class and students are talking about it as a class. Mm. And then after that, they're going and they're recording on their computer, even if it's just writing the word and recording, and then they can listen to it on their computer. And because I think about how many times are they have that opportunity to be in the same language. And just one more quick story is that I've had so many students that are unwilling to either share with partners or are unwilling to talk, but a lot of times they're willing to record. Mm-hmm. And so, right. It's just all these opportunities to build language and provide them with multiple correct answers and give them these opportunities to just say, you know, hey, let's practice and it's okay. And go record and see how you sound. I feel like when you're doing these, you're able to hit so many kids because, you know, maybe the kid just wrote a CR, but they're able to record and say the word, mm-hmm. and internalize it. And so I feel like just, you know, hopefully I touched a little bit of, you know, why either the protocols, but also technology really helps with these and balances.
Mm-hmm. No, I remember when I got the copy of your manuscript and I was reading it and you guys were talking about Seesaw in the beginning. And I honestly, as a blended learning expert who was coaching thousands of teachers during COVID, Seesaw for elementary was just the lifesaver, right? All those creative tools embedded are so incredibly useful. And it does not surprise me that the microphone is a fan favorite, although the drawing one, I feel like kids were really attached to as well. And when you were talking, Ben, I was thinking, I was watching an Instagram story that Matt Miller had shared around using AI-generated images, like very funny images with animals, to inspire creative writing in his Spanish class. And I thought, as you were talking, as they get a little older and they can handle more complex images, some of the animal images he was sharing that he was using to inspire storytelling and writing among his Spanish students, I think might be fun for elementary as well. Totally. So, Jen, what do you, I know when we were kind of prepping for this episode, I was asking you guys to think about just imbalances in education. Because from my perspective, I can see how the way you guys are approaching the work in your classroom could help to really create a little bit more balance for you guys as educators. But I'm curious, like, where just generally in education do you see the imbalances? Why is it so hard in this profession to achieve a, you know, healthy-ish work-life balance? Are there things that you'd love to see kind of change or shift to create more balance in the lives of teachers? So any or all of that that you want to speak to, I'd love to hear.
I think obviously there's a lot of imbalance in this fact that teachers are just always, and it's not just teachers, right? It's educators, it's the principals, it's the TOSAs, it's all of the people who are working in the school system, right? But there's always like, it always seems like there's one more thing to add, or there's one more thing to try, or there's even maybe you're hearing into protocols and you're like, oh, another thing to try. Mm-hmm. And, but really the key is not just making everything one more thing, but figuring out how to make them work together. And kind of like Ben was talking about, like, okay, yeah, we know we need to teach vocabulary. We know we need to teach syllables. We know we need to teach phonics. How can we save some of this time and really teach some of these things together? But then the other part of it is too, like, your planning, right? A lot of it is planning, or how much I see teachers all the time with their bag taking all these papers home to grade over the weekend. And I'm like, okay, but let's think about that. Let's think about some of these practices and how can we make them more efficient for you so you're not taking these home and grading them. And I think that's one of the greatest things about Edger protocols is I don't have to grade things because it's all about that immediate feedback. You know, as we're doing little parts, as we're doing emoji writing, as we're doing math reps, I'm constantly walking around and giving those students that immediate feedback. So they're not waiting until 3 weeks from now when I finally graded all those papers to get feedback and the data is not even relevant anymore. And so I think that's a big part of it is looking at like kind of your practices. How can you change some of them so that you're not grading over the weekend? Because that's going to take away from your social life. Another thing, honestly, is why are we giving homework anymore?
Like, slow clap for Jen, everybody. Slow clap for Jen.
Because it's just like for teachers, it's an imbalance for students. Yes. They're at school all day working so hard. And then I know in elementary, it's not nearly as bad, but I know in other grades, they're going home and they have 3 or 4 hours of homework. And even if you're like, oh, I'm only sending home one worksheet and a book. Oh, book's great. Let them pick a book that they want to read. That's amazing. But do they really need that worksheet? Who's helping them with that? And then we have that whole other imbalance of who have parents at home that can help them, who have parents who are working. We don't know their home life. And so there's like all that kind of stuff too. And then it's more prep for you. You're making homework for them. Like, yep. Take that out of your life right away. And that saves you time. Yeah. And then one more thing about your protocols is they're replicable. So I'm not constantly recreating things. And when I'm prepping, I don't even know, Ben, like if we have an emoji writing template, how long does it really take to make a new one? Cause it's like, all we do is delete the emojis and add new emojis and it's done. Mm. Or if I'm doing little parts, all I do is change the image. I mean, so it's not a lot of time consuming things. We do a lot of sketch and tell. That's like literally just take out a piece of paper and write sketch and tell on it. Like the students can do it. And when you're giving them more like agency and voice and choice and how they do things, it's really a lot less prep for you because they're the ones creating. And so I think that's part of it is teachers already have a lot on their plates and then we add more to it because we want to be the best we can be, right? So we're always looking at all these things that we want to do. And really the thing is, look how we can put them together. Mm-hmm. Look at what is really essential. What are the things you know you have to do in your classroom that are like, that are you, because every teacher is a creative individual. What are the things that really make you? And what are some of the things that we can get rid of to save you some time? Mm-hmm. Those things you're grading on the weekend, how can we get rid of those for you? And I think Edger protocols is really one of the answers.
Oh my gosh. I feel like I could talk for 30 minutes about all the things you just said that I agree with. And I will say it was probably third grade watching my own children come home where I thought, goodness, they just spent 7 hours at school. My daughter's in third grade and she's spending almost an hour doing homework. I want her to go outside and play around and find bugs or read a book or do something else. And I think sometimes as adults, we lose sight of the fact that not only are kids in school 7 hours a day, but as they progress into even higher grade levels, they're expected to be focused and pay attention and on task like the entire time. And then we send them home with homework.
it makes not a lot of sense to me. It doesn't allow them much school life balance, which I think is problematic. And to your point, Jen, it just creates this never ending mountain of paper that then teachers feel, you know, I signed it, I got to collect it, I've got to grade it for accuracy or put some points in the grade book to make it quote unquote worthwhile or to incentivize kids to even want to do it at home. And not to mention all those equity issues you alluded to. Do they have a quiet environment? Do they have any support system? Do they have the tools and the materials they actually need to complete these tasks? So I love that. Thank you. Ben, did you want to add anything before we move on?
No, I just, you know, everything that Jen said, and it's just so hard, you know, to meet the expectations of students and parents, especially with homework, right? And mm-hmm. and just anybody who's had children has always had, I mean, struggles with even my own kids crying at home. And so I guess the challenge too is how do we educate? Because sometimes, you know, teachers don't give homework, they're a bad teacher, right? And so how do we kind of educate more parents that, you know, the effects of homework and how can we provide them? And so it's definitely a challenge, you know, to meet all of those. But, you know, everything that Jen said, I just two thumbs up.
Yeah, no, I think that retraining of kind of parent expectations of like, wait, this is what I remember about school. And you're like, we're changing things up, because there's a lot of research calling into question. I just read an article that was about the negative impacts of math homework on students. And so I don't know, sometimes we feel like we just keep doing what we used to do without questioning whether it's the best thing for teachers or students. So I think those are great points. Now, I'm going to leave this open to either one of you or both of you to respond. But when I work with teachers, so when I'm coaching elementary teachers and they're implementing a new strategy and instructional approach with learners, especially the littles, the young learners, the young students, there's always this fear that students won't be able to do what we're asking them to do. And I push back on that all the time and just encourage teachers, instead of thinking about or worrying that students can't do it, let's take the opposite approach and think about, okay, let's just assume they can do it because they can. Kids are incredibly capable. But what specific supports and scaffolds might they need to be successful? So if we have educators listening who worry about young students being able to kind of engage in these edu protocols, what would you say to them? What has your experience like been onboarding young learners? Are there supports and scaffolds that have been particularly helpful?
Well, I think one thing, there's so much of this idea still that, you know, technology is not appropriate for lower grades. So I kind of, before we move on, like it's kind of mm-hmm. some of it is addressing that issue. However, edu protocols are, when Jen and I write our book on edu protocols, nearly every edu protocol that we're doing is both a paper or Jen and I kind of call it a digital and analog. Mm-hmm. Both the analog kind of being like your, we don't want to say just paper and pencil because it's manipulatives, it's Legos, it's Play-Doh. Mm-hmm. And then on the other hand, it's digital. I think, you know, with computers and so, or robots, you know, all the things. And so I think I'm saying that because we really use the tools to support with the protocols, they support each other. Like, you know, one day we'll do a protocol on paper. The next day, maybe we'll do a protocol in Seesaw. And because they're already familiar with the protocol in one way, it makes it easier to do kind of in the second way. And it also gives students kind of a different approach on the protocol. And so I think that's one thing. And then I think for me, the other thing is kind of like you said, well, where do I want our students to be and how are we going to get there? If I want my students to be able to do this on the computer, how are we going to get there? I think, you know, especially like you mentioned with high school students, like so many times we just assume kids can technology, whatever that is, because, they have access to it all the time. Yep. Right. The thing is, you know, they might be able to use my kindergartners can go on Roblox and do crazy things, but that doesn't mean that they can use Seesaw. Right. And so mm-hmm. we really have to be specific in how we're adding the tools. And Jen and I have approach where we layer the tools on. We use repetition to get them there. Just like everything. Right. You got to show kids how to hold the pencil. You got to show kids how to use the technology and give them chances to do that. Jen, what else do you have to add on to that?
To piggyback on that too, I think a lot of teachers are, especially of the younger grades, are a little more intimidated by technology because they haven't really used it themselves, right? And so they haven't, it's always been like, younger students don't use technology. So it's always been the thing. And so they haven't experienced it as much. And so they, like, I know at least with a lot of teachers I speak to, they're just like, well, I don't feel as strong in the tool. And so it makes me nervous. And so my answer is then don't stress yourself out about that yet. Start small and get there. Yep. So my idea is like, you know, say you want to start edu protocols or something like that. Pick one protocol. You can get overwhelmed. You can read the book and you're like, oh my gosh, I want to do this, 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 and this. But that you don't have to do everything. Start small. Like when I started doing protocols, I think I started with math reps. Mm-hmm. And then I started with emoji writing. And then I started with little parts. Like once I got the hang of it. And then each year that I do it, I get better or I do it a different way or I learn a new strategy with it. So I feel like, yes, your students can do it. You can do it. Just start smaller with them. Another thing I love about edu protocols is the idea is that when you first implement them, you do it in a low cognitive way. So you're teaching the protocol really well so that when you bring in the content, it's a lot easier for your students to access. And so when we first do something like emoji writing, it might be really silly and we might not even really be focusing on a specific skill yet. We're really just teaching how the protocol is and what you need to do. If we do little parts, it might be a really silly picture that they can all really relate to. And then what's great about it too, is it is accessible to all and it's naturally differentiated. So if I said to them, okay, we're going to read, you know, the Three Little Pigs, some students may have never even heard of that story. So if I just show that picture, hopefully they have some idea, but they might not. But when I, if I'm like, who are the characters? If I ask that question, they might not know. But if I say, okay, a noun is this, what are some nouns we see? Now I have about 30 different correct answers. So every student feels like they have it. And so when you think about like, okay, what do my students know? What do they need? And you're okay with starting small and then progressing. It's all about a progression. We talk about that a lot when we do little parts. We might start with only two parts of speech, no writing. Then we add in writing. Then we add in another part of speech. Like just start small. And then when you're going to do technology, check out Seesaw because it is the easiest one to use for primary grades. And just start by taking pictures of what you're doing. That's one of our biggest things. Just take pictures of what you're doing. And then again, Ben, after we start getting used to taking pictures, what's the next thing we can do?
Right. We can hit the record button and record and talk about our picture. We can get that. Maybe we get the pencil out and we draw on top of the picture. Then we can, maybe our next step is adding some text labels if we're in some higher grades. And like we talked about, like just really layering those skills as we're moving forward.
And just like that. a progression. And then what's great is Seesaw too. They have all these like PD in your PJs and little short webinars, like less than 30 minutes. And so you can watch them anytime you want to get those next steps. So if you have questions, then don't hesitate to reach out. We always love to help. I know technology can be scary, but your students, it's not really a choice anymore. And so we really need to make sure we're doing it. And I'm not saying, hey, get rid of all analog tools. It's a balance. This is all about balance, right? So we don't want them on that computer all day either. We are pro everything else, but you can't say no anymore, really, honestly.
No, I love that. And when I encounter resistance, I think what you're saying is so true, which is a lot of that resistance is fear because teachers don't feel like the expert of the tool or the strategy. But listening to the two of you talk, like you're so clearly lead learners, right? You're learning and you're okay with like figuring it out and starting small and getting bigger. And I think that's something that I wish more teachers kind of embraced, which is I am the lead learner in the classroom. There is no end point to this whole learning thing we're all doing in here, not even for me, your teacher. And so the best way to model that is to, you know, choose something and try it and make the little mistakes and grow and add on to it and get better. And I mean, I have seen first grade classes where there's, I don't know what they're called, but it's the little thing that hangs and it's got the clear little tabs where the kids have
pocket
like
charts.
Thank you. And they have their little QR code. And literally, because often the getting into the computer is its own little very annoying hurdle for teachers. But like seeing these little first graders go grab their QR code that's laminated, get into their computer and get started. And it's just, to me, it is about that starting small, strong routines, lots of practice, and being okay knowing that you are kind of working toward a larger goal over the school year with the young learners. So I love that. And your point, Ben, that it's hilarious that we assume kids can do everything. My son is a freshman in high school. He takes his computer or Chromebook or whatever to school every day. The other weekend, he was recording a video for his English class, and he said, I got to get it into, I don't know how to get this into the slide deck. And I said, buddy, you got to upload it to Google Drive and then you embed it. And like, he's been using Google since he was in elementary school, but like even that workflow, he didn't know. And he's like, oh, thanks, Mom. I was like, no problem, but that's hilarious. You didn't know how to do this. So I think no assumptions when it comes to what they actually know how to do in terms of using technology for learning, at least we can say. Okay, so I love to ask my final question of guests, which is, it's really selfish. I'm just trying to learn from all the incredibly intelligent, creative people I have on the podcast. But I would love to know if there is something that you do that's a strategy, a routine, maybe a work-life boundary, whatever, that's helped you to create more balance in your life. Anything you think might be helpful for other teachers who are kind of struggling with that work-life balance and all these responsibilities as a teacher. So, Ben, you want to kick this one off?
It took me a while to kind of redevelop habits, because I used to love to exercise when I was younger. And then, of course, after four children, you know, battling up and down, right? It takes time. And so finally, I've been able, and part of it I'll blame on my adventure companion, my dog, Noriko Coco, is just being able to get out and go for every day, just going for, you know, a walk or a run, you know, when I'm able to, or get out on a bike. And whether that's for 20 minutes or if I'm really, you know, blessed, maybe it's 2 to 3 hours on a weekend, is being able to get out and taking my kids out with me. Because I just feel like after I come back, I'm just so much more refreshed. I'm a better father. I'm a better husband. I feel like I'm a better educator. And so I just think that whatever, you know, whatever your exercise is, whether it starts small, even if it's just walking at lunch, whatever you can do to kind of get that movement, get the exercise in, whatever that is, I feel like there's so many benefits, you know, to doing that, for so many reasons. And so figure it out, whatever it is, get that in. And I just think that exercise is so important, to find that balance. For me personally, it just keeps me going.
No, absolutely. And I also have a four-legged motivator, Lila Grace, who is my companion on walks. And it is so nice to just move your body, kind of let your mind wander a little bit, maybe listen to a great podcast or music or whatever. So love that advice. How about you, Jen? What works for you?
Leave school at school. I know that's easier said than done, but you got to leave school at school. Yes. And you know, I used to be like, oh, I'm going to go in on a Saturday, or oh, I'm going to stay late. And then I'm like, why am I doing this? Like, I can, and that's when Edu Protocols kind of helped me too. But you have to. And I mean, of course, there's always things that we're going to have in our mind. There's going to be students we have in our mind. There's going to be that kind of stuff. But if we can just leave school at school, that's going to help you be focused. And then like my trick is I make an appointment. Like, so when I want to go to the gym, right, I have to like make an appointment to drop my kid off, right? So I'm like, oh, he can go play while, because he's only 2 and a half. So I'm like, you go play while I go do this. And I make an appointment, because if I make an appointment, then I'm not going to cancel. Nice. So that's kind of like my idea. And so just do little things like that to get you out of school also, and to leave it there so you can come home and be you, because you are still an individual and you still need to do you, right? And yeah. So you don't want to burn yourself out. It can be so easy.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Thank you guys both so much for joining me and for inviting me to be part of, you know, this book project, Writing Your Forward. I loved reading it. I highly, highly recommend it. I hope there's a part two. That would be amazing one day. So thank you again for joining me. It was really lovely getting to talk with both of you.
Well, thank you again for having us. And we're just, we just love your work, and we're really appreciative of you. And, if you're listening out there, please feel free to reach out for Jen and I if you need any support on this journey. Because one of the mottos I think of stealing from John is that promise of lifetime support.
I love that. And I will have all of their contact information in the show notes. Do you guys want to shout out real quick where maybe the best place to find you is?
Silence.
I know. So, it's always who's going to go first? Like Jen, you know, Jen. Since Jen said silence, you know, I still have to call it Twitter, you know, like it's still I can't call it. But Jen and I are on Twitter, and you can find Jen, I believe, at techie_Jen with two N's. Is that right? Did I get that right?
You did great.
And I'm at Cogswell_Ben. I was like, I didn't want to put Jen on the spot. Could you have done that? That's probably the best place to find us.
I think I could have.
I think
but
you
yeah,
could
and then we're working on some other things, but that's probably the best. And then we do have a website, but it's a work in progress. But definitely check us out. And then another cool little thing about our book is that we do really focus on Smart Start, and that includes getting started with Seesaw and technology. And so if you're like looking for a good place to start, definitely check it out.
Yes. And I will include all of the X, formerly known as Twitter. And when you guys get that website up and running, we can add it to the show notes too. So thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Thanks so much.
Oh my gosh, I love this conversation. It's so exciting to talk with educators who are clearly so passionate about working with young students. And I love how they were able to describe the specific ways they used some of these edu protocols with kindergarten students and first grade students. I love that these are easy to replicate, so it lightens the load in terms of designing learning experiences. And anybody who's worked with young learners knows that it's really important to onboard students to a protocol or a process. But once they're onboarded, the fact that we can use these again and again and students are comfortable with them, they develop confidence with them, just makes these really, really exciting. So grateful to have Ben and Jen on the podcast sharing their experiences, why and how they use these protocols with students. So anybody in kindergarten, first grade, second grade, looking for some cool ideas, especially those of you who might already be using Seesaw and wanting to kind of leverage that as well, definitely check out this book. It is absolutely fabulous. And as always, thank you for joining me for this conversation. If you have any questions, any comments, please find me on X at @Catlin_Tucker, on Instagram at @Catlin_Tucker, or you can send me a message straight from my website, catlintucker.com.